This week is in Chutz Laretz here is Parshat Naso, and Parshat Naso is kind of a strange parasha in that much of it deals with the theme of Bamidbar, which is setting up the Machaneh. The first part of Naso continues the end of Bamidbar with setting up the jobs of the different groups of Levi'im, Bnei Gershon, and then the end of Naso lists all of the Shvatim as each one of them brings their Korban for Chanukat HaMizbeach. The chronology of this whole piece is very difficult because that happens back in Nisan. The beginning of Bamidbar happened in the second month. But in the middle, there are four halachic passages, the first of which is Shiluach Tveim, the last of which is Birchat Kohanim, but the two middle ones are four more famous and well-known because they're longer and because of their juxtaposition also gives rise to a famous midrash. And that is Parshat Sota and Parshat Nazir. And last year we talked about Parshat Sota and some of the bizarre stuff about Sota. I want to look at the issue of Nazir today through the lens of the Haftarah. So just a word about the Haftarah. Why do we have a Haftarah at all? It's why is it that we read from the Nevi'im on Shabbat morning and Yom Tov morning and Yom Kippur afternoon, and et cetera? Why do we read from the Nevi'im? Because there was a time, it's unclear when, whether it's the Greek period or the Roman period, where there was a decree that we couldn't publicly read from the Torah, so they substitute. And what I've never understood about that is that they made a decree not to read from the Torah, but Nevi'im was okay, a little bit strange. But in any case, and by the way, the history of this is very murky. We really don't have a good handle on it. When, who, where, and even what Beit Din instituted it. And it's unclear whether it was actually instituted by Beit Din or whether it was generated by the people. But in any case, the custom arose to recite part of the Nevi'im, specifically Nevi'im, that was related to the parsha. Here, parenthetically, an interesting note is that the Minhag Bavel, which is what we follow of reading the Torah over the course of a year, also adopted the Minhag of reading from the Nevi'im with a theme that was similar, that had significant enough things. So Parsha Vayera, for instance, which is the first part about it, is the annunciation of the birth of Yitzchak, the impending birth of Yitzchak. So the parallel story is Elisha and the Shunammite and her son being born. And then it's always interesting to look for other more subtle ties between them. In the Minhag in Eretz Yisrael, where the custom was to finish the Torah twice in 7 years and read much, much less every week, the custom was to find a haftarah that started with the same word. In other words, thematically, it could be unrelated. And recently, at least in the last 100 years of Geniza research, we were able to find the entire list. It was published by Yossi Ofer, the entire list of haftarot in the Minhag Eretz Yisrael. And very interesting and different than what we have. Haftarot, by the way, were free choice. The Mishnah tells, with very few exceptions, sort of what the guidelines of our haftarot. You can't read this haftarah, and this haftarah you read without targum, and you have to read at least this many psukim, and it was really wide open, which is why, if you take a look at it, haftarot are minhag specific. So you look in the back of the Chumash, which lists haftarot, it says, well, the Ashkenazim do this, and the Sephardim do this. And if you have a real intricate one, minhag Roma is this, and the Ammonites have a different minhag. And so haftarot were much more up to the individual to do as he saw fit, based on the context, based on the setting. But the haftarah that has become universally the haftarah for Parshat Naso is the annunciation story of Shimshon. Because Shimshon is the most famous Nazir in history, right? You say Nazir, you think Shimshon. And why is Shimshon such a famous Nazir? Well, two reasons. First of all, because there is a halachic classification known as Nazirut Shimshon. Right? So therefore, you have a Mishnah at the beginning of Masachet Nazir, its first source, which in a person says, Hareini Kishimshon, the beginning of Masachet Nazir, follows the model of Masachet Nedarim, which precedes it, and that the first part of it establishes what we call hafla'ah, the different kinds of expression which obligate you in a neder. So if you say it this way, if you say it that way, when does it attach? And the whole range of things that work for a nazir are, sort of, if you say hareini kishimshon, hareini kevemanoach, hareini kebal delilah, which is interesting because we have no reason to think they were married. All right, kemisha akar daltot azah, kemisha nikru plishtim et enav. These are all things that are, shall we say, somewhat unique to to Shimshon. It may be that Delilah had other husbands, and it may be that there may be other people, including Tom Jones, who were married to somebody named Delilah. I don't know, but that's why the Gemara then goes on and says, that's only if you meant that Shimshon and that Baal Delilah. Okay, but if you say that, then you are Hareza Nazir Shimshon. Then in that case, you are considered a Nazir Shimshon. Now, Nazir Shimshon is a unique halachic category which works as follows. You take a look at the story of Shimshon, and what were his halachic limitations or obligations that are different than everybody else?
Hair.
So it seems hair, although it's unclear whether he actually had a prohibition of cutting his hair nearly so much as a consequence to it. Because notice, he doesn't say in that heated moment with Delilah, I'm not allowed to cut my hair, but if my hair is cut off, I lose my strength, and that's indeed how it plays out. So it's a little bit strange. But the Nazirut Shimshon therefore becomes somebody who is bound by avoiding haircuts and shaving. However, a Nazir has three different halachic limitations. What are they? The grapes and wine, the hair, and Tumat Mate. And Tumat Mate you just cannot associate with Shimshon, because Shimshon's entire raison d'etre is to kill people. Now that's what he's there for. Here, take a jawbone of an ass and kill 1,000 plishtim. So it's kind of hard to say, yeah, we have an Easter of Tumah Lamate. It's going to be very weird. And so therefore we have this halachic category called Nazirut Shimshon, which is Nazir Shimshon, as you see at the end of source 1. Nazir Shimshon means Saro ino mekel v'im nidma ino mevi korban tumah. So that's b'diavad. If he encountered death, he doesn't have to go through the process of a Nazir Shinitma. The reality, though, is that lachatchila he may go to a funeral. He may even be the cause of the funeral. And so Nazir Shimshon is this weird category where you're severely bound in two of the areas and absolutely unbound in the other area. Strange. What I'd like to look at over the course of this year is whether or not the story of Shimshon supports that category. Right? So what's this category of Nizirut, what we're calling Nizirut Shimshon? And the main area I would really like to look at is the wine. Because if you think about it, each one of the three areas of Nazir is the sort of typological or the mark of a Nazir in a different way. If you think about it, what is the most severe of the three prohibitions? So undoubtedly, Tumat Mate. And the best proof is that if somebody is a Nazir and they drink wine, they get makot, and they continue. And if they drink wine on day 20 out of their 30 days of minimal Nazirut, then they have 10 more days of Nazirut, and they did something wrong. It's like somebody else eating chazer. But it's wrong, but it doesn't impact on it. If a Nazir gets a haircut, they got a haircut. He may have to wait 30 more days because of shiluach pera. He may have to have hair grow out, but his Nazirut isn't lost. Let's say a guy's a Nazir, and on day 90, somebody in the house dies. It's not even intentional. What happens? The whole thing is torn up, right? Or whether it's torn up all the way back to Shloshim, depends, Machlok, Rav Elazar, Chachamim, but the Nazirut is destroyed, essentially. And he has to go through the period of Tumat Mate, of 7 days, and then a whole special, unique ceremony for Nazir Tamei, and bring a special korban, and then start again with the whole time. There's a story in the Mishnah about Heleni Hamalka, who took a Nazirut of 7 years. And it was, I'll be a Nazir for seven, Nazirah for 7 years, if my son makes it back safely from war. So she was a Nazirah 7 years. But because she had done the Nazirut in Chutzlar, she came to Israel, she had to do another 7 years. And on the last day of the 7 years, she became a Tmei Mate, another 7 years. So 21 years as a Nazirah. Okay, good. But so you would assume that Tumat Mate is the most severe. So here we're calling Nazir Shimshon a category, and Shimshon is the archetype of Nazir, and yet Shimshon seems to have the most critical piece of Nazirut, not as a player. Why do we think that Nazir, the template of a Nazir is about the wine? Because what does the word Nazir mean? That means somebody who's separated, somebody who's distanced. What are they distanced from? So typically we think of it as they're distanced from certain pleasures, and you may enjoy getting a haircut, but that doesn't seem to really have that din of a ta'anug, but wine seems to be the issue. On the other hand, why would we think that the hair is the main thing that makes somebody a Nazir?
Well, is it pleasure or is it for body comfort?
What?
You're busy with yourself.
So that's part of it. But also, what does the word nezer mean? A nezer is a crown. And the word nezer in the pasuk, in the psukim of Parshat Nezer, is played both ways. As somebody who abstains, it's very clearly abstains in one part. And another part seems to be referring to the hair, his hair as a crown. Ki time rosh nizro, if he becomes tameh. It's like he's defiled that crown. And so, and the word nezer, certainly throughout Tanakh, it refers to a crown. And a nazir in some cases actually means like a minister or a government official, because of the same thing. And so it seems to play both ways. So when you're talking about a nazir, so you picture someone with long hair, or you speak to somebody who's abstaining, right? In modern Hebrew, a nazir is a monk. When you think about a monk, it's somebody who's abstained from worldly pleasures, right? And that may be what the wine is. So all three of them play a critical role, but Tumat Mate seems to be the most central, and yet Shimshon's not in that box. So I want to take a look at Shimshon from the perspective of wine. But I want to take a look at somebody else from the perspective of wine, which is a very weird thing. All right? So if you look in the second passage, you'll see, and I made the phrase red, the whole story starts that with Mrs. Manoach, some simple lady, evidently not so simple, working out in the field, and a guy shows up. And the guy says, behold, you are barren, and yet you're going to have a son, and he's going to save Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael right now is under the thumb of the Plishtim yet again. He's going to be the one to rise up and save from the Plishtim. And now, here's what you got to do. You can't drink wine or alcoholic drinks, and you can't eat anything tameh. Tameh would seem to mean non-kosher food. Seems to be. Right? Which is odd, because that means who we're talking to. We're talking to somebody who does otherwise. But that's a separate problem. And then he says, why? So what does he tell her? Behold, even though you're barren, now I'm telling you you're pregnant, you're going to have a son. He shall never have a razor go on his head, because he's going to be a Nazir Elohim from the stomach, a Nazir to God from the stomach. And therefore what? You don't drink wine. What's that about? Very strange. And by the way, you don't drink wine until when? It's open-ended. So you could argue, okay, maybe it means until she has the kid. And there's some sort of, you know, ubar yarechimo, and the kid's part of the mother. That works very well, except for later on in the parak, you have an ellipsis there where Manoach, the husband of Eshet Manoach, prays that the Isha Elohim should come back and should give proper instruction. He comes back. Manoach comes running out to the field. His wife gets him, runs out to the field. He says, okay, what are we supposed to do? He says, okay, you also avoid wine. Now, maybe Manoach shouldn't have asked, but anyway, you also avoid wine and don't eat tumah. Everything I told her, you abide by. So you can no longer hold by the in-the-womb thing. So why are Shimshon's parents not allowed to drink wine? And by the way, again, it's open-ended. There's nothing here that says, until the bris. You can have wine at the bris. Garnished. Very strange. But I'm going to ask you a different question, which is, what's Shimshon's relationship with wine? We, of course, assume that Shimshon is absolutely forbidden from drinking wine, absolutely forbidden from cutting his hair, and the one thing that he is allowed to do, and actually encouraged to do, is go be Tamei Lameit. Right? But there's a problem with that. If you take a look in passage 3, you hear the story of Shimshon coming down to Timnah to make arrangements with the family of this Plishti girl, and to arrange the marriage, and how we feel about that. And Shimshon on the way down, let's take a look at it. Vayevet Shimshon v'aviv v'imo Timnata. So he, his father and his mother, go down to Timnah to arrange this marriage. Vayevo ad Karmei Timnata. They come to the vineyards of Timnah. And what happens there? V'inei kfer ayot shoig likrato. A lion suddenly comes to attack Shimshon. Now Shimshon is Shimshon. And this lion jumps at Shimshon. I love this line. It says, and what happens is Shimshon suddenly gets this tremendous strength. Latzliach, by the way, in Tanakh means to happen very fast. Like fast, something good. So Hashem's spirit comes on you fast. So Hashem's spirit comes on him fast, and he rips the lion apart, just like we rip apart a goat. I just did last week.
Is this his first time exhibiting this strength?
This that we hear about specifically. Right, sounds kind of like, you know, he's doing this without any sort of weapon. He didn't tell his parents about it. Which, okay, very nice character traits, humility, whatever, but don't his parents know that he ripped apart the lion? They don't know because they're not with him. And that becomes substantiated later on, because when he comes back a year later to marry the girl after they made the agreement, he comes through to see what's going on with the lion, and he sees inside the lion's carcass, this gives birth to the famous riddle, is a beehive is developed in there. He reaches in, ignores the bees, grabs a bunch of honey, and brings it to his parents and doesn't tell them where it's from. And that leads to the famous riddle, Ma'az me'ari, ma'ma tok midvash, right, which is the answer to it. But me'achel yatsa ma'achal, u'me'az yatsa ma'tok, from the eater came food, and from the strong one, or the astringent one, came sweet stuff that nobody could solve because it's an unfair riddle. We talked about that riddle last year. But he didn't tell his parents where the honey came from. So how come his parents don't know? His parents were with him both times. First time to make the arrangement, second time to celebrate. Sheva brachas with the police team. Go figure that one out. So why don't they know? Well, they don't know because they didn't go with him. Why didn't they go with him? Because where did he encounter the lion?
In the vineyard.
So he comes to Karmei Timnata. So we all assume, at least I grew up, I assumed, that his parents went through the Kerem and he went around because he's an Azir. And what's the famous saying that we all know because it's just regular everyday Aramaic? Schor schor minin Azir ala karma lo tikra. We tell the Nazir, walk around, you know, tell somebody who's on a diet to take the other direction, not walk in front of the bakery. So you tell the Nazir to walk around and not go through the vineyard. So we assume Shimshon went around and encountered the lion outside the vineyard and his parents were in the vineyard, except actually the exact opposite seems to make sense. Because the only people we see who are bound to not drink wine are his parents. So it seemed that he comes into the vineyard, he encounters the lion in the vineyard or on the way in. His parents aren't there because they're not allowed to go in the vineyard because they're abstaining from wine. We then come into the place and Vayas Sham Shimshon Mishteh. There's some alliteration there that's deliberate. Vayas Sham Shimshon Mishteh. Try saying it a few times, it's hard. All right, Shimshon makes a feast. Mishteh always means wine. Now, yes, I could imagine Shimshon serving up wine, having a big feast, and not partaking, but that's a little bit of a stretch. And the truth is that there's no reason within the text to think that Shimshon avoids wine. He participates in a mishteh, he goes through a kerem, but his parents have to avoid it. It's very strange. And then the hair again. And now notice what he's called throughout. He's called Nazir Elohim. Not Nazir. Nazir Elohim is if it's some sort of special category. So I want to start from the beginning of Parshat Nazir and show you what's difficult about this. How does Shimshon's career get started? It gets started before he's born. It gets started because a malach, or Isha Elohim, however we're to read it, but it ends up being a malach, comes to Mrs. Manoach and says, you got a baby in there, I'm telling you what to do with that baby, I'm telling you
so
what that baby
is. We don't know that,
that
the mother is Jewish or the father is Jewish.
No, we do. They're both from Shevet Dan. Okay. Well, she's actually probably from Shevet Yehuda. Okay. He's from Shevet Dan. Right. Yeah, because the interesting thing is when Shimshon comes and says, I saw this cute police girl, I'd like to marry her, they say, how come you can't marry somebody from the family, or at least from, like marry at least a girl from Dan. If not Dan, at least another Jewish girl. Nebuchadnezzar, right? By the way, that's how, you know, shifting period is very tribalist, so you would think you want to stay within the tribe. But they're definitely members of the larger tribe. We have reason to think she's from Yehuda, from a different context. But take a look at how the whole Parsha of Nazir begins. And by the way, the story of Shimshon, the way that it's understood halachically, and now we have to draw an important distinction in Parshanut, in the way we look at text. The way that the Parsha of Shimshon is understood, the story of Shimshon is understood halachically, is not necessarily the way that we understand it exegetically, the way that we read it as a text. And we have lots of examples of this. I'll give you one quick example from something that just happened this week. You read Megillat Rut. And this is something that hits very much into what Rav Stav and Rabbi Stern are dealing with these days, is you read Megillat Rut, and the story at the end of Perek Aleph, Rut's famous words to Naomi, becomes a template in the fourth Perek of Masechet Yevamot for Giyur. And it's a whole conversation. Naomi says to her, we have Tchum Shabbat, Basher Talchi Elech, Yichud, Basher Talini Alin, right? We have to give Tztaka, Mechami, Avarazora, Elohai, Elohai. it becomes the model, and Naomi pushing her away becomes the model, and the entire piece. The problem is that when you look in the story of Ruth, you're very hard pressed to find Giyur there. Did Ruth convert before she married Mahlon? It's a hard sell, because if so, why is Naomi pushing her away? I tell you, go back to your Avodah Zarah. If, on the other hand, Ruth converted somewhere on the road, where's your Beit Din? Right? If on the other hand, you're going to say that Ruth converts at a later point, well, then this conversation isn't that. But what happens is, we do this, and we do this with numerous texts in stories in Nevi'im and Ketuvim, is that we take halacha as it's formulated, and we somewhat eisegetically read it back into the text. That's totally fine, because we're working essentially with the Masorah of how things work, and it's not really based on the Psukim. We read it back. But when you look in the Psukim as Parshanut, and this is why the Parshanim, the Pashtanim, the ones who read Tanakh and read it as Pshat, like the Ibn Ezra, the Rashbam, and others, will often bypass and say, Al Derech HaPshat, this is what happened. There's a whole Midrashic world out there that teaches the important lessons. As far as the text goes, this is what's going on in the text.
Yes.
Yeah.
Could have been possible back then, when things were less formalized, that when you marry, there's this conversion process, whatever that looks like, but when your husband dies and you don't have kids, maybe you're released?
Yeah, possible. I didn't want to talk about conversion, it's certainly the case.
You mentioned a Beit Din with Ruth. There was no Beit Din.
That's my point, again, we're hard-pressed to find all the necessary details in the story, but that shouldn't bother us. Because what we're doing is we're saying, here's a model of conversion, we're using certain components of it to teach us what we need to know, but to actually read back and say that it fit the contours of the way that we know it to be in Bayit Sheni Halacha, it's a very difficult sell. And we don't need to do that sell. We shouldn't feel obligated to do that. I'm saying the same thing here, is that even though we have a halacha of what we call Nezirutim Shemim, and a Kabbalah of a father being able to obligate his young son in Nezirut, take a look, please, at source 5, which is where things kick off. The whole parsha of Nazir starts with the following: Daber b'nei Yisrael matadem ish o isha ki yafli lindor neder nazir lahazir l'Adonai. Which means, what is the absolute prerequisite of Nazirut? An individual expresses the vow to become a Nazir. Which means that in utero you can't become a Nazir. And if you're a day old, you can't become a Nazir. Now, yes, we have a halakha of a father being able to madir his son, who's already alive, in Nazirut. But this doesn't seem to fit the model. It seems to be something very different. And the notion of a Nazir is something, meaning, of somebody who separates himself from the ways of the world, from the normal standard, from whatever it might be, in a more ascetic, more hermetic kind of living, is considered a Nazir, even though it doesn't follow the normal standards of Nazir. So, for instance, I'll ask you this question. Who's the first drunk in Tanakh?
Noah.
We all know it, right? We know the story well. All right. Who's the second drunk in Tanakh? Well, we think Lot, even though it doesn't say Shikor, but we hope Lot is, because we really like Lot even less if he's not drunk. All right. But after Lot, what's the next drunken scene in Tanakh?
The Vayikra one?
And no, it's Yosef and his brothers. Vayishtu vayishkaru himo. All right? Interesting, because what does Yaakov say on his deathbed about Yosef? Take a look at source 6. Berchot avicha gavurah berchot horayat devat tavat kidvot olam. It's an interesting Janus parallel. Tiano the Rosh Yosef kod nazir achav. A big machlok at Parshanim. What does nazir achav mean? Nazir from Nezer, he's the crown, he's the leader? Or nazir achav, he's separated. Now, is he separated from his brothers in the sense, some Rishonim read it this way, that they separated him out because he was an outcast, Ki'ilu? But Nazir doesn't usually take that sort of a meaning. It usually means something that you've done yourself, and it all takes the meaning of something that's much more laudable. And so some explain Nazir Achav in that however great his brothers were relative to everybody else in their abstinence and in their self-discipline, he was even greater. And that speaks, of course, to Yosef's golden moment, which is Mrs. Potiphar. Which throughout Midrashic history is, and evidently in some of Yaakov's brachot, is alluding to that. So he's Nazir Achav in the sense that there's something that he separated himself from, and in that way distinguished himself among his brothers. But Nazir Achav here doesn't have to do with wine. As a matter of fact, he's one of the guys who's drinking in Tanakh. But it's not about wine. It's and it's not about hair, because what's the first thing that happens when he leaves the prison? They shame him. It's about some other kind of separation that exists. So just as one last piece here, and then I'd like to suggest what I think is happening here. If you take a look in Amos at the beginning, the first two prakim of Amos is an oracle against the nations, a series of oracles. Al shloshah pishei damesek v'alalo shivenu, and seven different nations, including Yehuda, that surround Israel, are all accused of doing terrible crimes. And the model is, you've done three terrible things, the fourth thing I'm not going to let you go, and then we hear a terrible thing, we assume is number four, that broke the camel's back, and that's why they're going to get punished. And terrible to rut, move around, and it's like a box that ultimately boxes in Yisrael, who is almost his audience. In their case, it's Al Shloshah Pishei Yisrael Va'al Ba'al Shivenu, which you may remember because it's the Ashkenazi after, at least, for Vayeshev. It may be universal. And there, instead of there being one item mentioned, there's seven. So Shloshah V'arba there is not three and a fourth, but it's three and four. And the seven terrible things that they've done. And then there are seven great things that Hashem has done for Bnei Yisrael. So like, in spite of these seven great things, you've done these seven terrible things. Vashmi, Morim Nechem, Asher Govo, Kegova Arazim. And one of the things he says is, and then there's seven punishments they're going to get. It's all almost love seven. God says, I raised your sons to be prophets and your young men to be Nizirim, and then you told the Nizirim to drink with wine. Take a look at what Rashi says about Nizirim. He says, Tigim Yonatan the Malfin Shayum Prushin Midarkei Ama Aretz, meaning Nizirim more in the translation of monk than in the translation of Nazir. Meaning somebody who just avoids the ways of the world, somebody who's a hermit, not a hermit so much as an ascetic, right? And the Ibn Ezra says, "Shotolotam lehova ta'anug v'simcha kidashtim lochichachem ulkadoshchem." So in other words, he says, typically, why is it Bachurim? Because Bachurim are young men. They're filled with a drive to hedonism. And nonetheless, I was able to drive them to move away from that, which means that even in the Tanakh itself, we're seeing that the word Nazir, both pre-Matan Torah and after Matan Torah, has multiple uses. There's the formal category of Nazir, which depends on an individual walking into a situation for a set amount of time by his own or her own formal acceptance of saying Hareini Nazir, or whatever it might be, I don't mean it, of that sort. And then there's all this other sort of broader category of Nazir, where somebody has been separated in a particular way, has been distinguished in a particular way, and maybe in the Zir Elohim means that it's something that they didn't choose, but God has chosen. That's, by the way, what Shimshon is consistently called. So let's look back at it and see what is happening in the story of Shimshon. Remember, all of Sefer Shoftim, should we say the middle part of Sefer Shoftim, not the end, the last two stories, which are all telling you how terrible things are when there's no king, which is the introduction to Shmuel, and not the beginning, which is the overview of the period, but the middle part of Shoftim, from the middle of Perak Gimel through Tet Zayin, which is the Alilot HaShoftim, the stories of the Shoftim, which starts with Otniel and ends with Shimshon, going up and up to down. The basic setup is that there is a tribe, typically it's one tribe, that is being oppressed by some foreign enemy. And they're oppressed for anywhere between a few years and 20 years. And they just cry out. They don't necessarily daven, they cry out in pain. And then God immediately sets up a shofet, a military leader who's going to lead a rebellion against this overlord, and leads the rebellion, and the overlord is Feshmetered, and they're saved, and things are cool, and then as soon as that shofet dies, they go back and they go back to their ways of Avodah Zarah, and things are terrible, and etc. And that's kind of the pattern of the shoftim. What happens here, where the introduction to the whole story of Shimshon is that the plishtim have again set in. Here we don't hear about the plishtim being oppressing any particular shevet, but it seems from the context that it's to the southern area, because Shimshon is in that area and the plishtim live there. And Shimshon is now the savior. He's going to be the one who was the savior. So he, unlike other shoftim, who have some charisma, have some political connections, who have some strategic style, like Ehud with the right thigh, Shimshon has brute strength. And God's going to bless him with brute strength. This guy's going to have amazing strength. But here's the problem. Amazing strength, like any other amazing talent, carries with it a tremendous danger. Because the more powerful you are, the more dangerous that power is when not used correctly. And the problem with physical power is that physical power can ki'ilu know no bounds. You know, when you're somebody who's that strong that you could just do that and knock a wall down, then you knock a wall down. And there's nothing to stop you. So Shimshon, who the way things are presented, although later on we hear about Echav, but the way he's presented, at least at the beginning, he's the first child, his mother was barren, he's growing up, and he's growing up in a home with his parents. That's it. How is he going to be guided to use that power correctly? And that, I submit, is why the Malach tells his parents, you have to avoid alcohol. You have to avoid eating tameh. You have to be models for this boy growing up of restraint. Shimshon is not, his wine is not his issue. He has to understand power comes with danger. So your job for your entire lives, or at least the entire life of Shimshon, is to avoid wine, is to demonstrate restraint. Because, by the way, wine is the main drink in those days. To not drink wine means you're really separated from everybody. And it's something that stands out at any social gathering at any time. We say, no. It's not like you say, I'm going to have beer. Their beer was terrible. To say, I'm going to have schnapps. Didn't have. Wine means that you're really putting the steps out. Which means his parents are being told, you demonstrate consistent, constant, and severe restraint so that you can be a model for him so he'll understand that his power needs to be channeled properly. Did it work? That's a good question. And whether Shimshon should be considered to be something of a success or an abject failure or something that people still fight about, to consider him a tremendous success is a hard sell. And perhaps the best proof of that is the fact that he killed more people in his death than in his life. But I believe that that's what we're looking at. Again, looking at the pshat story of Shimshon. Looking at what Nizirut Shimshon is in Halakha, and the way we understand it is based on our Masorah about different categories of Nizirut. And notice, by the way, how do you become a Nazir Shimshon? It's the opening, it's the first source. You say, I want to be a Nazir Shimshon. What if your mother says, the one in my uterus, in my womb, is going to be a Nazir Shimshon? Doesn't mean anything. Which means Nizirut Shimshon is inherent impossibility. Because all of Nizirut Shimshon starts in utero, in the story. So even Shimshon himself is not a Nazir Shimshon. And so I believe that what this story is dealing with is a whole different kind of Nizirut, which is the kind of Nizirut that we see both pre and post Matan Torah, of a general kind of asceticism. For whatever reason, and I have no idea, Shimshon's hair becomes the symbol of his purity or of his loyalty or of his devotion or whatever it is, and therefore, when it's cut off, all of the power that comes with it is lost. That's still part of a very different story.
What
would Nazir Shimshon? If somebody said, not the mother, if somebody said, then they would be able to, you don't do it today, you don't do any Nazir today because you can never finish it. But you would never get your haircut, not even yearly. Be Nazir for life, never get your haircut, never shave, and you can never drink wine.
So then Nazir in your Shalayim?
No, it's a different story. That's not Nazir Shimon. That's a different story.
Okay. All right, so I want to follow up. I was going to ask the same.
In any case, I just wanted, because okay. I just take into account that, and so hopefully we got a better sense of how the story is. The story certainly has tremendous reflections, not only on the Parsha of Nazir, but also, very famously, remember how Nazir is understood in its odd location in Parsha Naso. Is that Parsha of Nazir immediately follows the Parsha of Sota. And what's Rebbe's famous homily about that? It's there to teach you, Kol HaRoes Sota B'Kil Kula Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin. Whenever you see people who are behaving in a way that's depraved, and you see that they're now being called on it, that should inspire you to yourself, draw yourself in, and restrain yourself. So Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin, notice, doesn't mean Yasat Atzmo Nazir. Rebbe's not saying make yourself a Nazir. In Rebbe's day, that would be a very foolish thing to do because you could never finish it. You can't finish Nazirut without a korban. But Rebbe's saying, if you see a sota bekil kula, yazir atzmo min hayayin, when you see what unbridled desire or unbridled power can lead to, you should immediately draw things in, and this seems to be the lesson.